Hi, welcome to Musings with Monse, a podcast where I have meaningful conversations with all kinds of artists. Musicians, poets, photographers, and other creatives share their honest stories, touching on the duality of being creative, the pure joy of making art, but also the particular struggles that come with it.
And honey, there's no way that I'll ever know everything about you, but oh, how I love what I do. And honey, I love what I don't know too.
In this episode, I'm talking to Rachel Demme, who is primarily a music photographer. Rachel has a really interesting story. She honed her photography skills while on the road as a tour manager for rock bands over 10 years. I'm a really big fan of her work, but since I've gotten to know her, I'm also an even bigger fan of who she is as a person. I got to sit down with Rachel in San Francisco recently, and we talk about everything from the romance and heartbreak of friendships, learning how to say no, letting yourself sit in the gray area, to panic attacks, to trusting your instincts, and her choice to walk away from a fulfilling career in tour management, and what it was like to come down from that life and walk into a new chapter. She also shares her favorite things, including a beautifully imperfect, perfect memory that will definitely make you smile. One of the reasons I like Rachel so much is that when you're in her presence, you know she is being fully herself, and she's just such a deep, thoughtful person. This is really one of my favorite conversations I've had. And as you'll hear, we both allow ourselves to be very open, honest, and vulnerable throughout. I think no matter who you are or what you're going through, you're going to get so much out of this episode because Rachel imparts an abundance of wisdom here. Thanks for listening and enjoy. Okay, well, this is so fun to do this interview in person. This is rare that I get to do an in-person interview, so.
This is my favorite way to do it. Yeah. Just have face-to-face conversations.
It's the best. Yeah. And we just got to have a little, it's funny, we were just, for the listener, we were just talking, took a nice little walk and had some matcha, and there's so many things that I want to revisit from our off-the-record conversation that we were talking about. But before we get into all that stuff, let's just start off with you just talking about who you are. And, you know, professionally, you're a photographer, and maybe specifically, I could say you're a mostly music tour photographer.
Yeah, that's accurate.
Okay, good. But aside from what you do, you know, who are you? Like, what makes you you and how you move through the world?
Oh, wow. That is a big question.
I know.
I am primarily motivated by relationships. So I spend a lot of my time going from person to person and having conversations, hanging out with people, being social. Yeah. I love using photography within that as an extension of my relationships. But ultimately what it always comes down to is, I'm a friend.
I can feel that even just having met you. Oh, you know, you're very present and very like, I don't know. It can feel like you're probably a really good friend to people.
I try to be really present with people. I make direct eye contact all the time. And because I really do believe that the greatest gift we can give each other is our attention. And especially in this world that we live in now, where it seems like people's attention is constantly being pulled in multiple directions. Like I really, when I hang out with people, I actually forget about my phone and I really try to just like be with somebody, which is nice in theory, but it can also be really intense and kind of draining at times if you overbook yourself, which I tend to do. So I'm currently in the midst of learning how to not overbook myself and make sure I safeguard the time that I need to kind of, get refilled, recharged.
Totally. We were talking about that earlier too, about like learning how to say no and being able to own that and just like know, like doing that self-care evaluation, like, okay, like I only have a certain amount of energy to give and, you know, and distributing it as such, sort of like making sure that you protect some of that.
Absolutely. But I always felt like if I said no to somebody, I had to give them a good reason why.
Right.
And now I don't feel that anymore. And I think like that's a big step for me to just be like, no, thank you.
Yeah.
Or, you know, without any explanation.
Right.
Because I would never build myself. I would never budget for myself because, you know, in many ways, like being with people really does give me energy and give me life and it gives me ideas. And And I love that exchange of ideas with people. I could talk for hours with people, but I also then will deplete myself and then disappear for a couple of weeks to a month, you know?
That's exactly the way I am too. It's almost like this mixture of introvert and extrovert, right?
Absolutely.
Where you're like, you feed off of the energy, but you also need a sufficient time to really come down from that too, and space for yourself to think and to process.
I think, the processing part. It's like, if you think about it, like input and output, right? Like, you can't just constantly take in input and not figure out where it goes.
Right.
And that sort of like, when I use my relationships to better inform my view of the world and like what I think about things, like that requires a lot of processing.
Yeah.
And I'm starting now to learn how to budget that in and use photography and writing for a way of figuring that stuff out.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. And speaking of just relationships too, something that you said that really stuck with me was, I think the last time we talked, not today, but we were talking about female friendships, mm-hmm. because we're talking about how when you met Adan in Seattle, how you guys were just like immediately friends, you know, and I loved what you said when I said, you know, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately as I'm, you know, 36 years old and I've been single for a little while, you know, now, and by choice, you know, like I think it's another thing that's funny is like people assume when you're single, they're like, oh my gosh, but why? You know, and all these things.
Totally.
And it's like, actually, there's like, I don't know. I feel like there's so many other kinds of love outside of like that sexual or, you know, partner kind of love. And
there
you can,
is.
You know, and so I was telling, we were talking about this, and not that I'm saying I don't want that kind of love too, but I'm very picky about whoever that person's going to be, like, you know, in my life. And I was telling you how I feel like I have a life full of so much love, you know, and even though I don't have a boyfriend at the moment, you know, and I have some female friendships that, like, I think have been just as or more so profound than actual romantic relationships I've had. And you were saying, you know, that there actually is a romance to friendships too. And I love that you said that. It's so true. Can you talk a little bit about that? What's that
been your life? Sure. Yeah, I think we were talking about that because we had both agreed that like the worst breakups we've ever had have been with females, our friendships, and not necessarily our hetero relationships. But I think one of the beauties of friendship, and I believe in many different kinds of love. I think the love that I have with my husband, you know, is a very specific kind, and the love that I have with my sister, my family, my mother, what you have with a dog or a cat, all of those things are incredibly valuable, and they're just different.
Yeah.
And the thing about friendships is that we rarely ever enter into friendships with like an agreement.
Right.
And it's a lot like being in a band too. Like my husband and I have talked about that quite a bit, about his relationship with his band and how you're just set out to do this thing and you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you're like, whoa, where are we? Like, how do we do this? You know, and it's a lot like being in a marriage, and same with friendships too. And especially with female friendships, because I feel like, I don't know, like we are so much more open sometimes when there are no rules for what a friendship can be. There's so many rules for what a romantic relationship is. A lot of that, you know, informed by history and religion and, you know, wherever you come from, culture. But with female friendships in particular, there seem to be no rules.
Yeah.
And that's beautiful.
Yeah.
But that's also really painful when
you
make a misstep or you have end a friendship, because so rarely friendships begin with like, okay, we're doing this,
right?
You know,
but
right, they so
exactly.
very end, like they, a lot of them end that way.
Totally.
And I'm in a situation right now where I'm actually, you know, I'm struggling with a certain female friendship and from a distance, and realizing that eventually I will have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But I'm taking this time to really like allow myself to figure out how I feel about it and letting myself be angry, which is not something I normally let myself do, is sort of what we were talking about earlier as well. Like sitting in that gray area, having a feeling, having an emotion, having maybe a gripe you need to like work out with somebody, but just allowing yourself to be in that gray area for a minute.
And not have to take an action step immediately.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's, I love that you said that, because it is so true. And I think that almost that impulse is like, oh, I'm feeling this certain way. I need to do something to fix it or move towards it or resolve it. But sometimes you need to leave a little bit of space first.
Well, and not even just with other people, but with yourself too. Like I discovered, you know, I have these moments in my life where I recognize there's an opportunity for self-improvement or for learning something. And I had something happen, you know, about a year and a half ago where I like came up against some of my own limitations, and some of that being like, I don't know if I really want to, like, you know, be responsible to an animal, for instance, or like, because I really like to travel and like, and I realized like, that's, maybe that's a deficiency, or maybe that's just who I am. And maybe even if it is a deficiency, maybe I'm okay with not fixing it.
Yeah.
Yes. Like I don't have to fix everything about myself just because I'm aware that it's there.
100%.
You know,
totally,
and that's,
totally.
That was like letting myself off the hook for that.
Yeah.
Really actually allowed me to grow more in different ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, because I didn't always have a personal project.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
totally.
That was based on some completely arbitrary or maybe even non-existent rule of how I was supposed to be. It's like, I look at my life right now and I see, you know, I get to travel. I have an amazing partner. I know so many creative people. I get to be a photographer full time.
Yes.
I realize I have the life I've always wanted.
Yeah.
And I have in some ways carried some guilt about that or felt like, well, because other people do it this way, maybe I need to do it this way. Even figuring out how to like construct my day to like get work done.
Yeah. And just letting yourself be yourself in all the different colors and ranges of that. And like we were talking about earlier too, about jumping off and sort of going into the unknown and being able to just really trust your instincts despite what the rest of the world is telling you.
Yes.
You know, can you talk a little bit about that? Because you were a tour manager for, was it 10 years?
10 years, yeah.
Yeah. And as we were saying, like, you know, it's a really fun, glamorous, charging life, you know? And like, how did you, and how you kind of had to come off of that after deciding to step away from it, that it was a bit of a hard time because your identity is wrapped up in it.
Yeah.
And how I've also been there, not as a TM, but in other capacities. So I know that feeling. And can you talk a little bit about that for yourself and what that process was like?
Yeah. Yeah. I was somebody who grew up really caring what other people thought about me. And I grew up, you know, kind of hoping, like, giving authority to people like teachers and adults to sort of tell me how I was doing.
Yep.
Friends too. It's almost kind of a miracle that I've come out with my own personality in a way, because I just looked to everybody to tell me that I was okay. And
me too. I totally have can relate to that.
And that comes from being like kind of a latchkey kid and like, you know, I have some unusual circumstances in my childhood, which is, I wouldn't trade for anything at this point. But I've always also had cool jobs.
Yeah.
So like
yeah.
my first job was like working at a skate shop and like, you know, I've always done cool stuff. And so I think I really liked being known like not only as a hard worker, but somebody who did something cool.
Totally. Yeah.
And so touring was like the ultimate, right? But what was happening is that like the more work I got and the more established I got in my reputation in touring, the more I realized the sacrifice I was making for other things. And I couldn't plan my life. I couldn't look 6 months ahead and like take a class. I have other interests. Like I have other interests besides working and hanging out with musicians and helping other people, you know, realize their creative dreams, because I am creative as well. And I had no time to do that. And so I started looking down the barrel of another 9 months of touring, and I was like, wow, it's like, I don't know when I'm going to see my, at that point, boyfriend, but now husband. I don't know. Like, it's so hard to talk about goals because I can't see further than 2 feet in front of me at any given moment. And I think that was the point that I realized I was tired and I really needed to like recenter and just kind of do something else. But what I hadn't expected was as soon as I quit, that it's like the circus left town and left me behind.
Yes.
And it took me a long time to realize how hard that was for me. It took me about 3 years to get over that. And a lot of it just because of old habits of wanting to be known as someone who does something cool, you know?
And I so appreciate you being real about and honest about that. And like, because I don't think we talk about that a lot, but it's kind of like almost like a fundamental need or want is just to be seen in a certain way, or, you know, or just in general, being able to be seen for
who you
are.
Well, why do you think I'm a photographer?
Right.
Exactly. Because I get to show people that they're seen.
Yes.
And that's
yes,
really important yes, to me. And that's yes, that's one of the reasons that I love shooting. Is totally, that I get to prove to someone that they exist, at least to me.
Totally, totally.
And yeah, everybody wants to be seen. I think that, you know, we all do something in some way that shows like, hey, I was here.
Whether
yeah,
you're like yes, yes,
engraving
yes,
something in a tree or putting a selfie on Instagram. And I don't judge
totally,
any of that.
Totally.
I think it's all very valid.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's definitely hard when the people you thought were your friends because you worked together
yes, yes,
suddenly aren't there anymore and you don't really know who you are.
I thought I loved what we were talking about this a little bit about the, like, you know, at least for me, like once I wasn't at a certain job, very glamorous job that I had, you know, where everybody wanted to be my friend. And trust me, I felt that. Like it was like, you know, I mean, I felt like almost overwhelmed with how many people wanted to get coffee with me and,
yeah,
you know, and it's hard because I'm somebody who like wants to give back as much as possible. And it was like almost exhausting because I was saying yes so much and I had to sort of say no. But anyways, that's beside the point. I was going to say that once I wasn't at the job anymore and for a time when I didn't have that fancy email address anymore,
yep,
I was like, oh, okay. Like some of these people are not really interested in me being my friend. It was about
but what you represent.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But I thought you had a very sort of like generous and a little bit more of a kind view of that. Like, because you said, I forget exactly how you put it, but that, you know, do you remember what you said?
I said something to the effect of like, you know, they're not bad people.
Exactly.
It's right, just that you can't be friends.
Right.
And friends with like capital F, high quality,
yes,
high standards.
Yes.
A lot of criteria for what a friend is. You can't be friends with everybody.
Totally.
Like, unfortunately, we don't have the bandwidth. We are finite creatures. We don't have infinite energy to like,
yeah,
do everything all the time and be everything to everyone.
Yeah,
and
totally,
in a way, like, we shouldn't want that.
That's right. That's
because
right,
the people who have really done their time with you are the people who deserve your attention.
That's right.
And I get scrambled sometimes. I get really out of proportion. And I've been joking, oh my God, since like, especially the Marie Kondo thing has taken
yeah,
off. You know, I've been joking. I'm like, Marie Kondo, but for people.
That's what I do the same
yeah,
thing.
Totally.
I've been saying that as
like,
well,
who,
like for friendships,
who,
you know?
Yeah, like yeah, I really have to sit there and like, I've kind of done a little bit of inventory and figured out like, who do I really look forward to hanging out with
yeah,
and who has been there for me?
Yes.
And I have given my family
yes,
the shaft for a really long yeah, time. And
mm-hmm,
I started to realize like, that's not okay. Like, mm-hmm, as hard as it's been with, you know, my family at times over the years, like, I realized, like, I need to give them more of my attention
mm,
and more of my time. I need to let them in more because I've
yeah,
been giving my attention to just anybody who hoves into my field of vision.
Right, right.
And that's not a healthy way to live because
well,
that doesn't
right,
always, like, we have to consider these conversations or this time we spend with each other as an investment into the future.
Absolutely.
And I've just watched most of my investments walk away.
Yes,
or get on
yes,
a tour bus and drive off.
Totally.
And those aren't the people that like you call when you're having a panic attack.
Exactly.
For instance.
Which
like,
we're gonna talk about in a moment.
Yeah, totally.
But I think that's something super important. And I people that listen to this podcast consistently are probably like, oh God, here she goes again. But I think it's really important to know, you know, that you should pay attention that when you're in someone's presence, like when you leave, do you feel energized or depleted?
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I really, over the years, like it's changed my life to really pay attention to that and not, because I used to be such a people pleaser
yep,
and wanted just everyone to be, feel okay and be happy
absolutely,
and like me and all this stuff. And gosh, that came at such a high cost, you know,
yeah,
like for my well-being. And I mean, it was kind of awful. It almost felt like imprisoning, you know, to feel that, to be that way. And now I've really let that go. And I'm like, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there, not a lot, but there's some people out there that don't like me anymore because of
yeah,
that. And I've had to set boundaries. But I'm a hell of a lot happier. You know?
I used to say this out loud as like some kind of badge of honor that like I wouldn't take my anger out on people like ever. I was
right,
like, no, it's
right,
better to take it out on myself. I always said that it's better to take it out on me than it is to take it out on anybody else, even if they deserve it. And I realized like, wow, turning all of that emotion inward at me, even if it wasn't my fault,
yeah,
is not a healthy way to live. And I kind of was like, wow, fuck that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Sorry for the
no,
swearing.
No, there's always swearing on this podcast. Sorry.
Yeah, but like, it's not healthier to take it out on yourself.
No.
I think that you can be angry and be productive and be kind
absolutely,
and compassionate all at the same time. But
yes,
I no longer turn that inward.
Yep. Yep.
I can't do that anymore because that was really unhealthy for me. And it's really degraded or, yeah, degraded, like how I speak to myself.
Totally.
Which is, you know, actually does have effects on your mental, emotional health.
And also teaches people how to treat you in a way. You realize that the profound effect of that too. And I had a, I still have an amazing mentor, Karen Beasy. Shout out to Karen if you're listening. She's amazing. And she used to always say, you know, she really taught me by example that you can be assertive and be kind.
Yes.
You know, and I've learned that. It's like not one or the other.
Right.
You know?
And I it's taken me a while to learn that. And I feel like in the last year, I finally got the hang of that,
yes.
That I can definitely lay down a boundary and or tell someone when they've hurt my feelings or
something, whatever it is. And it brings you closer to that person, doesn't it?
It does,
or it doesn't, and then you know it's not the right thing.
Yeah, and that's okay.
And that's like, okay. Yeah.
I think, you know, like I don't think all friendships are supposed to last forever.
No.
And they're good for a time and then
it's
time to just let life kind of do its thing.
And it can and just like romantic relationships, friendships the same way. I feel a little funny talking about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I had a boyfriend years ago who, like many years ago, who was in Iraq for a year.
Wow.
And yeah, and I was coming off the heels of sort of a very dysfunctional sort of, you know, romantic situation. I don't even know how else to call it. It wasn't really a boyfriend. It was, but anyways, the point is, this guy, the Iraq, the soldier guy and I, you know, we were together for like a year after he got back and, you know, we weren't meant for each other, but I still have such a profound like love for that relationship because, you know, I think we were meant to be together for that time in such a big way and for each other because one, for me, he really showed me what it was like to be truly loved and treated well.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the other side, I remember the first time he told me he loved me, he told me that I kept him alive out there for that year, you know, and just thinking about coming back to me was what kept him going. And to know that I was able to give that to him during that time, such an amazing thing too, you know. So I think about that. And I mean, I've had not just like romantic, I've had friendships like that too, where it's like you really serve a serious purpose in that person's life. For a time, and we can move on. Like, I don't talk to him anymore, but I have such a love for him. And, you know,
I think we put a lot of emphasis and a lot of pressure on forever.
Yes.
Like, it's only real if it lasted forever.
Right.
And I think that what we sometimes discount is the right thing that happens at that time, at that moment.
Yes.
Like, you have that person walks in the door at that right moment or is there for you. And even if it doesn't last, it was still important.
Yes.
And I have this thing now where, like, you know, when I meet new people who I love meeting new people, but I can't always follow up with a coffee date. And I've come to a place now where I feel like it's okay to just be like, I'm not going to give you my number because I feel like we just had this amazing thing, this conversation.
Yeah.
And it's okay that it lives here.
Yes, exactly.
And if we run into each other again, then we'll take that as a sign that we need to like continue this correspondence. But like, I just love those little bits of energy you get from...
Doesn't have to continue,
no,
right?
It doesn't have to.
Yeah.
Maybe you'll remember it more fondly if it doesn't.
That's so true. That's a good point. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, and can I, before we move on from this topic, because I do want to know, we did talk about on the phone once about, I was telling you sort of intimately about a really hard friendship breakup for me that is still kind of haunts me in a way. It was, you know, the first and only time really I've had a friend ghost me, you know, as they say now, ghost.
Yeah. That's hard.
And it was so painful, like more painful than any like breakup with the guy I've had because it was someone that I thought was going to be in my life forever, you know, and who called me her sister and was just like, and it was so confusing. And that left a big hole in my heart for a long time. And I wondered if you could maybe talk about, you don't have to, you know, share anything super personal, but talk about maybe, because you did mention that you've also gone through some really deep friendship breakups that were really hard for you and sort of how you moved on from that and maybe how it was different from like a romantic breakup.
There's one in particular that I feel okay talking about simply because we're friends again.
Oh, that's
great.
And
it's great. My friend Casey and I, like, we talk about the time that I, like, kicked her out of my house when she, like, moved to Portland and because she was being a bad house guest and I was tired from tour and I just kicked her out. And, like, then we didn't speak to each other for, like, a good year. And then we were at wedding together, and we like avoided each other. And then by Christmas the following year, we like, you know, met up at a party and we're like, I really miss you.
Aww,
you know, and
it
was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think one of the things that has always consoled me in times of uncertainty with friends is that no story is ever really over.
Yes.
Right. Like you have to leave some glimmer of a chance that like, they're going to come back into your life. And I had a friendship kind of end in 2005 that then came back around in 2010.
Yep.
Because we ran into each other at a car wash. Mm-hmm. And now we kind of keep in touch on the internet, and it's nothing as intense as it was. But we have to allow for friendships to change and like drift apart and come back together.
Absolutely. And give space.
Yeah, because, you know, even in breakups, like you can't. It's very rare you get to go from being romantically involved into just being friends.
Yeah.
Like you have to fully detach and then
definitely
let some time pass and reattach.
Absolutely.
And just trust that maybe you'll come back together. So,
yes.
You know, in this case with this friend that I'm, you know, have a little anger towards right now, like I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm okay either way because I don't have, I've learned to let go of the expectation of needing something from her. I think we spend a lot of time trying to resolve stuff with the other person.
Yeah.
And life doesn't always give us a chance to do that. Like sometimes you have to resolve the issue for yourself.
That's right.
With yourself and learn like kind of how to self-soothe.
Yeah.
And be okay with what happened and be okay with not having an answer.
Totally. And also recognize that maybe just because you have become like enlightened or know, have resolved something in your own mind, like maybe the other person isn't there yet.
Exactly.
You know, and like
and
leave
okay.
that room. And it, exactly. It's okay.
Yeah,
and like,
we don't all grow at the same rate.
That's right.
We don't learn things at the same time. It's, I mean, it's so easy to look at our friends and be like, wow, that situation that you're in could so easily be fixed by doing this.
Right. Right.
And they see things about us. They're like, dude, you're just doing that to yourself. Like, it'd be so much easier for you if you would just do this. And it's like, we can always speak about each other's problems that way. But the fact is we have to learn how to fix them ourselves. And we have to learn.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only way we learn is by doing it ourselves. And so, like, as somebody who learned that I was, like, deeply codependent, I learned that, like, I can't take on everyone's problems because I'm denying them the ability to learn, you know?
Absolutely.
And with friendships, it's made it a lot easier to be, like, I can be here for you while you're having a hard time. I can't take away the pain or take it on.
Yeah.
But let me, you know, I'll tell people, like, let me know how I can support you.
Yeah, exactly.
If it's just sitting here, then I'll do that, you know?
Yeah, totally.
Whatever. But,
gosh, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, like, with female friendships that have ended, I mean, I guess maybe I just don't believe they're really over.
Yeah, I love, no, that's so great. And it's so, I'm really trying to learn myself how to, like, live more in the gray and not be so black and white about things, too, you know? Because that is my tendency, to be like, oh, you're all in or you're all out or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
it's
I can do that, too, for sure. Yeah, like, if you're in, you're in. When you're out, you're very out.
Yes.
But I've learned how to tone that down
a little bit
by just kind of trusting that, like, no matter what happens, we're okay.
Yeah, totally. Like, you know what's so funny is, like, I know we haven't known each other for very long, but I feel, like, such a kinship with you already. Like, I feel like we, like, are on this similar path and, like, we're the same age, which is so crazy.
I know, that's
you know, we're the exact same age.
I love that.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah. It's something generational. Something
right?
1982.
Exactly. So I did want to talk a bit about anxiety and depression.
Sure.
Which is a huge topic.
Yeah.
But we can maybe start to unpack it a little bit and what it's meant and how it's touched your life. So we were talking a little bit about panic attacks because you so beautifully and openly talked about it on your Instagram, which I just always appreciate when someone is able to be openly vulnerable about that because, man, it's so important for everyone to know that you're not alone. Like, I had a severe panic attack, my first one and really my only one, like my only like big one, you know, was years ago. And it was scary and embarrassing and all of these things, the range of emotions, right? Like afterwards.
Yeah.
And like everything, the entire way that you described it was like almost exactly my experience, you
really?
Know? Yeah. And it helped me feel less alone. Like, okay, like I wasn't crazy. And I know I'm not because I've talked to other people about it too. And not we've all, but a lot of us have been there.
Yeah.
But maybe can you talk a little bit about what it was for you and how you moved through it and how you felt comfort in it and how, and also where you felt the courage to speak about it so openly?
I think as I look back on it now, I've learned a lot in this last month about a month since it happened. We tell ourselves a lot of stories about who we are, and it's like, I'm not an anxious person. I'm a depressed person. And this is the box that I fit in. And one of the things that I realized over the course, especially since I quit touring and have had a lot more self-awareness and a lot more time to really like feel things, instead of putting out fires all the time, is that I tend to really underestimate how much care my body needs. And my body rebelled a couple of years ago when I got chronic fatigue. And I say rebelled or betrayed me, because it was like suddenly all the sadness that I was hiding inside came flooding out, you know. And it wasn't just sadness. It wasn't just my depression. It was that I wasn't taking care of my body, that I wasn't eating correctly for me. I wasn't sleeping well. I was drinking too much, you know, all of this stuff. And it showed. Yeah. Like, it showed all over me. And I felt betrayed. I felt like, wow, like, my body really let me down on this one. I started to realize, well, that's because you treat your body like shit. Right. Like, you treat it like a workhorse. Right. And the other story that I've told myself is that no matter what happens, I've always got my mind. Mm. My mind never betrays me. Like, I'm learning its sort of weird idiosyncrasies, but like my mind has always been there for me. I've always been very cerebral. I was a really good student. I love talking. I love communicating. Yeah. I love living in that world of ideas. And after this panic attack, I realized, like, maybe I'm not taking care of my mind as much as I need to, or as much as I think I am. And the panic attack itself was really probably more a cry for help than anything. Because I kind of under...
Like your body telling you.
Yes. And when that stuff happens, I listen. Yeah. But unfortunately, it has to get to the point where I'm thinking I'm having a stroke.
Right.
And like going to pass out before I'll actually listen to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I'm primarily a really healthy person, and my body's always been there for me. My mind's always been there for me. So like, why is it letting me down? You know? To be able to talk about it openly, I feel like with that, that's actually really easy for me. And I'm not really sure why. There are moments in time, especially in the world of like social media, where like it might appear to a lot of people that I have a really perfect life.
Yeah.
And to be perfectly honest, like, I love my life.
Yeah.
It is, it's so hard for me to express like that. I never imagined that I would be where I am right now, you know, and I'm grateful. But the fact is that mental illnesses like anxiety and depression are probably the most democratic of all diseases, because it doesn't matter. Those external influences, they help. And, my privilege of, you know, where I am in my life right now means that I get to spend more time addressing it.
Whereas
when I was 25, for instance, like, I was just concerned with making rent and getting out of debt.
Yeah.
And I didn't have time to think about that stuff. Yes. I just had to do what I had to do. So now I actually get the time to work on it, which is, God, something that a lot of people don't get. And I'm so very grateful for it. But the fact is that, like, an amazing relationship like I have with my husband, huge community of people that I can call on, a nice house, like, a roof over my head, I could eat all the food that I want, like all the things, I have all of that, but like, it doesn't change the internal environment as much as people think it does.
It's so fun. I so appreciate you saying that. It's so, I relate to that so deeply too. And I remember recently I was talking to Emily, your friend Emily Katz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and on the podcast, and she said something that I loved. And she was talking about this one moment when she was in a really beautiful, serene space, and everything on the outside was just perfect, you know? Yeah. And she was like, but on the inside, she just felt utterly depressed. And it was just like, you know, this kind of day or moment, but that's when she realized it was a chemical thing, you know? And I just think it's people that don't deal with depression, I think maybe, or anxiety, don't necessarily get that. Maybe some do, like, but I think a lot of people look at it as like, what's wrong with you? Like, you have all, like, you should be happy. You have all these things. And it's just, it just doesn't work that way, you know?
It depends on one's definition of happiness.
That's right.
I did see this documentary, and I hate doing this thing where I'm like, I know this thing because I watched a documentary. Right, but there was this point. It's a documentary called Happy. It's on Netflix.
Yes.
And there was a point where they broke down some science, I think it was for science in there, they kind of broke down the percentage of one's capability of being happy.
Yeah, yeah.
50% of it's genetic.
Yeah.
And they said about 10% of it is external circumstances, the perfect job, the relationship, the house, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And then there's about 40% that you can actually control.
Hmm.
And the kind of what makes up that 40% is a little bit up to you and a little bit like some physiological stuff too.
Yep.
Like getting into this idea, you know, people talk a lot about flow or getting in your zone, like losing yourself in something.
Yes, yes.
And physical activity.
Yep.
Because we are human and we have these nervous systems that need to be run.
Yeah.
And that really changed my perspective a lot about how I was setting up my life to create a, and I won't use the word happy because I think it's really kind of myopic.
Yeah.
But I'll say content.
Content, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
To have a contented life.
Yeah.
And I realized, like, wow, I had really failed myself in the physical activity department, mm-hmm. or I hadn't lost myself in something in quite a while.
Yeah.
You know, I used to knit, I used to make things, and
and
then I got, you know, when I was traveling so much, I got away from that. I even quit reading for a while. Mm-hmm. I grew up reading. Like, I was never a TV kid. I was a book kid.
Yeah.
And so I realized that there was some ability to take back some of that control.
Yes.
And create situations that would help stabilize me at the least. But that 50%
mm-hmm.
being genetic, that's a big component.
Totally.
And I think that's a component that a lot of people don't explore.
Exactly.
I mean, both of my parents, in fact, my entire immediate family are addicts.
Yeah.
Now, granted, my mother and my sister are both sober, and that is wonderful. But I lost my father very young from addiction. It's pretty much genetically guaranteed that I will have a problem with that. And so I have to watch that in some form or another.
Yeah,
and, you know.
Do you think, like you mentioned codependency, that isn't that kind of like a form of addiction in a way?
It actually is.
Yeah.
I'm not ashamed to say this. I started going to Al-Anon.
Right. That's great that you did that.
Yeah. After my friend Richard died last summer from alcohol, I realized that after many years of people telling me I should go, I went. And it completely opened up. One, what I thought codependency even was,
mm-hmm.
and realized like, oh, like I am that. And I grew up with that.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think there's some elements of like my relationship with my family that
yes,
are that.
Yes.
And that actually gives me, once I started looking at my life through the lens of my history with alcoholism in my family, I started to see some patterns, even in the way that I dealt with my job and my career.
Yeah.
That was deeply codependent.
I've also been that way, so I totally know. And it's like, you don't think about it as an addiction or as something, but then you look at it, you're like, oh my gosh, like the fact that I'm like a workaholic. So I think there's all these like different ways that you can do this, that you can have this.
And I noticed it a lot in my relationship with my work and why I felt so much value in my work and my identity around my
work.
But I also think it's really important to say that codependency in and of itself is a form of narcissism.
Right.
I didn't realize that. I thought I was doing it all in the name of service to other people.
Right.
When
but it's
really,
not exactly that. Yeah.
No, it's not that at all. It's thinking that if you're not the one holding up the world,
mm-hmm.
it's going to fall apart.
Right.
Who are you? Who are you to
think
that?
I've had to think about myself too.
Like there's this beautiful balance between like human life doesn't matter at all.
Yeah.
And every human is the most amazing individual. You know, there's
totally.
No one like it. Like we're somewhere in the middle, right?
That's
like what we can contribute is valuable.
Yep.
But we are not solely responsible for holding up our families or for holding up. And, you know, the alcoholic friend.
That's right. That is such an important point, too.
Yeah.
It's like even like sort of along those lines, something I've had to realize, too, which is you realize that like I'm like, oh, my gosh, I'm being sort of self-absorbed when I'm like, you know, worried that someone's mad at me when they're like kind of in a pissy mood or whatever. And it's like, this has nothing to do with me.
They're probably
like,
not even thinking about
exactly.
you.
Exactly. And I'm like, oh, I'm just being self-focused if I'm thinking that.
Well, and I have to catch myself at times like that too, where I'm like, they haven't written me back. Do you know how many people I don't write back? And
exactly.
It's not because I don't love them.
Exactly.
It's because my inbox gives me a tremendous amount of anxiety.
Totally. And that's about you, right?
It's not
about them and how much you love or don't love them.
Right? And I have to trust, you know, that we are for the most part adults, and like if someone has an issue, I have to trust that they're going to come to me with
that's
it.
that's right
and if they don't, I don't need to chase them down
that's
and
right.
find it
exactly
like I
yeah, yeah.
we all need to learn to use our words and to confront uncomfortable situations.
Yes.
And
yes.
If I'm constantly hunting people down, being like, are you mad at me? What's going
totally.
On?
Totally.
You know, it's like, it's a waste of my time and it makes people uncomfortable.
Totally.
Because like most people totally. Really aren't thinking about you.
Exactly. Exactly.
And that's, you know, that's a, maybe that's a problem in and of itself and you have to reevaluate some friendships if they're not thinking about you. But, you know, it's at least that's valuable yeah. information because I get up my own butt all the time.
Totally.
And it yeah. has nothing to do with anybody
other person.
Else.
And I think, yeah. and it's a really good point too, is like, you know, also knowing where and when to have that conversation with people of like, look, as an example, you know, with one of my really good friends, you know, she's an artist and like she sometimes will kind of retreat inward when she's like going just really busy or really yeah. going through something like I do as well. And I know this about her. And she hadn't like texted me for a little while and didn't respond to my text. And I like totally knew that that had nothing to do with me. And I know she still loves me, but it's like, I sort of went to this point where I was like, remember, I was telling you about that friend of mine that's like ghosted me years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's almost like a little bit of trauma from that.
Sure.
Like someone that's super close with me suddenly disappears. And so from that, I like was terrified that we this little teeny, like almost 0% chance, like what if that's happening here? And I knew it wasn't the case, but I felt like so safe to tell her that that's where my mind went.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry you felt that way. And it's not, you know, that's not like the case at all. And I guess I'm mentioning this to say that there's sometimes it is appropriate to tell, like let somebody in on that inner chatter that you
sure.
is maybe a little bit crazy.
Yeah,
but
it's vulnerability.
It's vulnerability. Yeah. And some people are just really worth it to do that. And maybe some other people aren't.
No, I think that's the thing. It's like, I think I'm always really moved when somebody
yeah.
thinks of me enough to be like, when you didn't reach out, it
yeah.
hurt me. And I'm like,
yeah.
wow, I didn't know you cared about this as much as you did.
Totally.
And like,
totally.
I didn't realize I did until right now
yeah,
or whatever it is,
exactly.
you know, like having those little conversations, those little check-ins, I think
yeah.
we should do that more. And
totally.
I think we should do that in the name of vulnerability because vulnerability is exactly, gets us the kinds of connections I think we're hungry for.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly. And that's like, I think why that friendship is so, so special to me because we are both so honest and vulnerable with each other about all of it, like our weaknesses. And I love that we can show each other our crazy, as they say. Like she can tell me when she's really super anxious about something and I can help her talk her down a little bit from that and
yeah.
vice versa, you know?
Absolutely.
And those are the best kinds of friendships
yeah,
and relationships.
My very, very close friend, Kathleen, she understands me in a way that a lot of people don't. And
yeah.
she, you know, at moments when she sees him spinning out, she'll just like lean over and she'll go,
yeah.
you're safe.
Oh,
you're okay.
I love that.
You know,
because
she can see
yeah.
it happening
yeah.
and
yeah.
she doesn't judge me for it.
Totally. And that's the thing, you
yeah.
know, and you can feel that difference so palpably. Like I've had people that I feel so judged from, but like I've been vulnerable and it's just kind of the way I've always been. And I'm like, okay, like you're not getting this and it's okay. Like you're not my person. You're
yeah.
not one of my people, you know, and
yeah.
that's okay. And
that's okay. Like there are many
yeah.
strata of people that I absolutely love
yeah.
that I cannot make more time for, but like, you know, I see him at a party
totally.
And I'm always stoked.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally.
And
totally.
That's, we need to allow that to happen because
yeah.
I think, especially in the age of social media, like a lot of people don't fall off as naturally as they used
yep.
to
yep.
and come back together. It's
yeah.
like, we're always kind of aware, like the fact that people are like kind of aware of what anybody from high school is doing at this point, 20 years on,
I know.
I'm like,
it's crazy.
You
know? I
know. And it's not, I mean, it's no judgment there. I haven't carried many friendships from high school. And
right.
not because I didn't like, I had a great time in high school.
But it was a different part of your life and just
yeah,
we
it's a different
about.
Place.
Like,
I mean,
yeah,
geographically.
Yeah.
So yeah. And it's just so funny to me that like we can, I mean, not that there's no point in having my 20-year high school reunion next year, but like,
yeah.
A lot of people know what's been happening in
each
other's life
right.
because of Facebook and because of Instagram.
Totally.
And
totally.
So it's just an interesting time. It's like a lot of relationships don't get to go through the sort of ebbs and flows anymore.
That's right.
And I miss
that.
That
is so true.
You
know? I
know.
I know exactly what you're saying. That's so true.
Because there's nothing better than a happy reunion.
I know. And having kind of to be able to really catch up and not and be surprised.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I think also
yeah.
like social media in particular has made it really easy to get annoyed with and or dislike people that you actually really like in
yeah,
person.
Yeah, that is so
know?
True. And
you know?
Also the other way around, isn't it funny too how you can like see a person and be like, oh, they're so, I don't know, you think you almost like this false connection from somebody
mm-hmm.
because you think they're a certain way and then you realize they're not. And
yeah.
there's that it can go either way.
Oh, absolutely.
You know? So
yeah.
it's interesting. All social media.
Yeah, it's fun.
It is. Yeah, it is a beast. So just to kind of to tie up with a bow, this conversation of, you know, the anxiety and depression, you know, one thing I always ask is, what's in your personal toolkit to help you move through these times when you are just, you're feeling really down and you can't, you don't know why, and you just do. And like you were mentioning, you know, you don't like necessarily, sometimes you can't do anything to really pull yourself out of it. But what do you do to kind of help that along, to move it along?
Well, I have found that, you know, I have to have a balance of things. I can't be particularly dogmatic about anything.
Yeah.
Like, I don't do well when I deprive myself of certain kinds of food or fun or whatever. But for me, my work is finding moderation and balance. And so, and that goes with exercise, that goes with everything. So I'm one of the lucky ones with my depression and I guess newfound anxiety where like exercise really helps me.
Yeah.
You know, everybody likes to say that. They're like, you should really exercise more, and that will solve it. It's like, for a lot of people, that doesn't work.
Yeah.
They've tried all the things that people say, and that doesn't work. But for me, it does work. And one of the things that I, especially with the anxiety now, I am really, really protective of my nighttime routine and going to bed early and making sure that I, like, get all the sleepy time tea and, you know, the things like that, the things that calm my system.
Totally.
And honestly, safeguarding my solo time, because I realized like there is a correlation between swinging out of balance in every way, shape, and form and how social I am.
Yeah.
And so like, I think everybody lives on a social spectrum. I think there's no true introverts and extroverts. I think we are all a bit of both.
Yeah, totally.
And I am an extroverted person, but I really need to safeguard that time so that I can, you know, like I said before, like process, but, also, just make sure that I'm like I would deny myself for the sake of social engagements, like things I needed to do for my body.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like whether it be sleep or exercise or any of that. And it's like, now I've just made that stuff number one priority.
Yeah. Especially being on tour as a tour manager, like you have to deny yourself that
for
so
long. You deny yourself everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's like, you've got 30 minutes and it's like, do I call my mom or do I take a shower?
Yeah.
Do I take a nap?
Yeah.
Like, which biological need do I eat?
Exactly.
Because I have a lot of needs and I don't know how to get them all into this 30 minutes.
Totally.
And I've also learned, you know, over time that like, I'm kind of good for nothing in the morning.
Yeah. Right.
I wake up between, you know, 7 and 9 a.m. But like, I don't do my best work until the afternoon. And like, I'm surrounded by morning people who are like, get up and they jump out the door and they exercise and they write that fucking novel or something or that song in my husband's case.
Yes.
And like, until about 1 p.m., like I don't do a lot of let's just say like value in this society, this productive society.
Totally.
So I've had to learn how to be graceful with myself about that and like go by my natural rhythms, because when I do that, I actually get a lot more done instead of trying to cram myself into, you know, whatever everybody else is doing. I mean, we talked about that with quitting jobs, you know,
right.
And knowing what we don't want. And, I've learned to listen on a daily basis to like what, you know, if I want to eat a bunch of bread in a meal, I'm not going to guilt myself about it, because I know that like the next meal I will want something else.
Yeah.
And it will all eventually balance out at the end of the
day.
So that's really how I keep myself afloat, is just by allowing myself the balance. And I think one of the bigger epiphanies, and this isn't new because I've now read about it a little bit more in the last like year, but like I think about a year ago, and bear with me on this, like when I say this, but like I gave myself permission to be mediocre. And that doesn't mean that I think I'm so great. That doesn't mean that I'm destined for greatness. In fact, greatness is not something you get to choose for yourself. It's something that's kind of bestowed upon you, you know, and you're, I don't know, I guess you're lucky if you get it, but what you really have control over is just that you show up and do the work.
Totally.
And if you don't, if you're always expecting greatness from yourself, you're never going to let yourself fail. You're never going to let yourself mess up, which is so much more a part of the process than we, you know, than we think. And I just, one day I was putting so much putting so much pressure on myself that I was like, God, what if I just let myself just have an okay life? Just not do anything of real
grand.
I'm not going to be the greatest photographer in the world. I am content being a good foot soldier.
Yeah.
Like, I am content being the person who just maybe inspires people to keep taking pictures.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I can't think that far ahead anymore. And in that way, and with that permission, I have suddenly started to enjoy things so much more, enjoy the process
yes.
of putting myself out there and failing, or yes. putting myself out there and succeeding, or not putting myself out there at all and just making something because I want to make it.
Totally.
And it's funny because, like, you know, there seem to be all these rules for being an adult.
Right, right.
But, like, one of the greatest gifts of being an adult is you get to do what you want.
Totally, you know? Totally.
Like if yeah. you want to, like, you can have pizza for breakfast. You have permission, you have permission yeah. to do that. Like, there are no rules yeah. for, like, how to live a good life. You kind of have to listen to yourself.
Yeah. And it's such a good point, too, about the failure and, you know, realizing that, like, from failure comes that greatness and also the realization that you're going to be okay if you fail, you know, totally you're more than fine. Okay. It's, yeah. you know, and
people still love you. You still have intrinsic value as a person.
Yeah.
Like it's okay if you make mediocre shit and you just
totally,
but you enjoy doing it.
Totally. Totally. You know? And it's funny. Cause like I dish out this advice a lot to people. And more recently, about I've seen other people when they get very like nervous about something not working out or not getting the job or not getting the right, I don't know, like gig or X, Y, and Z. I can so easily say to them now, like, it's okay. If it doesn't come to you, it wasn't meant for you. And it's going to lead you to something different. And it sounds so like, ooh, woo, but I realized in my own life that it's always been the case.
Yep.
And it's just, the better thing always comes around the corner.
Absolutely.
So I believe that wholeheartedly. And I don't know. It's just, there's something really kind of freeing in failure, actually.
Absolutely.
You know?
I mean, I've only been fired from one job.
Yeah.
And it was a job I didn't particularly like.
Right, of course. Right, because it wasn't meant for you.
No, it wasn't meant for me. It definitely wasn't meant for yeah. me. On
if,
so many
if you're being fired, it's like, I don't know, if someone breaks up with you, right? It's like, if someone breaks up with you, if someone fires you, all these things that, like, I'm sure, you know, in it feels just, like, awful. But, like, when you remove yourself from it. And I was talking to another artist, Misty. I don't know if you listened to the podcast episode with her, but she's amazing.
Oh, right, the one you sent, right?
Yeah. And she was talking about how she had gotten fired from a gig. And she was actually miserable during that whole time. But she was devastated when she got fired. Because it's just like the being fired.
Wounded pride.
Yeah. Exactly. But it's like, if there's a reason that you're being let go from that, because it's not the right thing for you.
Yeah.
You know? So sorry, I sort of interrupted you, cut you off.
Okay. But getting fired from a job is like, yeah, you have that wounded pride, but then you realize like, oh God, I didn't want that job anyways. That was such a toxic work environment for me. And what it did do was like, help me reevaluate my relationship to the music industry. Cause that was during a time when I was like, getting off the road. It was like 2011.
Yeah.
Getting off the road, never touring again. And then I had 5 months at this job and I was like, oh, I will take all the demons of the music industry over this toxic office environment.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I went back to touring in a really renewed, vigorous way.
Yes.
And I was really proud of what I accomplished in those following years because I had the perspective of having a job that was not for me.
Totally.
And
totally,
that was really valuable information.
Yes, absolutely. And I love how you really carved out your own individual creative path now. Yeah. You know, and that's
trying.
It's great. So I do want to ask you, besides photography, you know, what's something that you can really get lost in?
Cooking. Yeah.
Yay.
I cook a lot. It's kind of something I don't talk about a lot or share a lot. Like I don't do a lot of food photos cause I'm a shit food photographer. Like
but you have friends for that, right?
Oh yeah. We got
Aaron.
For sure. Yeah. Like that's her job. But it's one of those things that I do and I take a long time. I'm a really slow cook.
Yeah.
Like I just really enjoy every bit of it. And I don't really even like listen to music when I do it. Mm-hmm. And it's one of those things that now has become kind of, because I'm not fluent in any languages, mm-hmm. but I feel fluent in this. It's like, I don't really.
Fluent in English. Don't forget
that. I am very fluent in English. That's true. But like, I look at recipes more as like basic guidelines and then I improvise all the time and I don't know how to.
And it's such a creative thing.
Yeah. I don't know how to describe to people how I know how to do that. I just know. And there's something so beautiful about that feeling of just moving intuitively through something and messing up and, you know, burning a meal or whatever it is. But like every time it gets better and I don't know, like, it's so fun to explore the world of like combining flavors. And my favorite thing to do is to like figure out what I can make in the fridge with just these leftovers and this and this and this. And I don't know. It's one of those activities that for me it stimulates multiple parts of my brain.
Totally.
Whether either it's the one that needs parameters and needs to problem solve with the leftovers, or if it's something that, like, I really want to explore how to make this, like, French sauce and it's going to take me forever.
But you're going to feel so accomplished afterwards, right?
Right, and I'm going to learn something new.
Totally,
so cooking is definitely one. That's a big one. And then, you know, I haven't been running so much. I had run a couple of 50Ks over the last few years. But as the sun comes out, I'm definitely a fair weather runner. So I started running again. And
did I read you have asthma?
I have exercise induced asthma.
Okay. I have asthma too. So that's why.
So that's a little bit tough for long.
Do you just use your inhaler before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or like I have to keep a slower pace to keep that heart rate, steady. But running was a big one. And I read a lot.
Yeah.
Get lost in books.
Totally same.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, I always like to ask, like, your favorite things.
Uh-huh.
So maybe I'll start with, what's your favorite book?
My favorite book, I think of all the books in the whole world that I've read, would probably be The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, that's a good one.
It's a
I haven't read it in a million years, but
it's
it was
one
really
that
good.
I have reread multiple times, and it's long enough and immersive enough that it's easy to forget what, like, a lot of the details in it, so you can revisit it almost like it's new.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, but, like, and I hate to admit this about myself, but I love a good, long, slow play revenge. Like, there's just something about that that is just so deeply satisfying. And, like, the terms of my justice meter, like, it just hits all those buttons of, like, justice and revenge, you know.
Yeah.
So The Count of Monte Cristo for sure. But right now I'm immersed in the Neapolitan novels by Elena Ferrante, which is recommended by my friend Dave, who's in Death Cab for Cutie.
Yeah.
He posted about the books, and it just sounded like something I'd be really interested in, as it talks a lot about the particular female friendship.
Yeah.
And so I'm really lost in those. I'm on the third book out of four right now.
Super
I'm
cool.
Just tearing through them.
Oh, that's awesome. And you mentioned earlier, and I want to get on the podcast so that all the women can hear this. What is the book again that you mentioned about your is it called about the women's and the bodies?
Oh, yeah.
Not about reading. But,
For women who have questions about their bodies or hormones or any of that stuff, because I had to kind of explore it during when I was dealing with chronic fatigue, is a book called Women's Bodies, Women's Wisdom. I mean, it's a national bestseller.
Yeah,
by Dr.
Yeah.
Christiane Northrup. And it talks not only about, you know, anatomy and what all that stuff does, but, like, the emotional and spiritual connection to your body and to particular parts of your body as well as maladies. Like if you have endometriosis, consider this emotional landscape.
I can't wait to get my hands on this.
Yeah.
It just sounds right in my alley.
Yeah,
something
really
every woman should probably read.
I 100% think that every woman should, like, read this book.
Awesome. It's well, thank
fantastic.
You for that recommendation.
Anytime.
That's great.
Yes.
How about a favorite place?
Favorite place. Oh, wow. I travel a lot, so there are a lot of, I like being in places, but the Swiss Alps.
Oh, so beautiful.
Favorite place.
Are you going to go there when you're, because you said you're going to Europe soon, right?
Yeah, my husband and I planned a trip.
Lovely.
Spend 10 days there.
Oh, lovely.
That is really, like, I went there by myself last year. Those trails, those mountains, the sort of ascetic nature. There's nothing particularly exciting about Switzerland in particular.
It's beautiful.
Like, it's just beautiful. Yeah, the mountains.
And the chocolate.
Everything. That's pretty good too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know why. And that's the thing. It's like, traveling as much as I do, I don't know why places resonate with me.
Yeah.
And some places don't. Like,
I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
You know, how, like, you feel like you can just feel so calm and, like, in your own skin when you're at a certain place and then not in the others and, like, uneasy. And it's like, what is it about the place?
I think
right?
we have, I think maybe there are different, you have different spiritual centers
in
the world.
And have you heard this term, genius loci?
No.
It means the spirit of a place.
Oh, I
and
love that.
And it's like, yeah, right? And it's, I thought about that a lot. Like,
how
there is such a spirit of a place and how you can be connected to it or not, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, I've been to a number of really amazing places that I don't care to go to again. And it's not because I didn't enjoy my time there. And
totally.
It's not, but to return to a place,
there
has to be something stronger than I just like that restaurant.
Right.
I mean, that's not a bad thing, too. I've definitely gone to places for a restaurant.
Yeah.
But the places that really resonate with me the most are the places that I can continue to mine when I'm there.
Yes.
And only and feel a certain way only when I'm there. And when I look at photos of my time in the Alps over the last few years, like, I just get that feeling looking at the mountains, you know,
yeah.
And something about the trails too, that make me feel safer. We, growing up in the Northwest and like the, I mean, we have incredible nature, but there are also a lot of big animals.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
totally.
Bears and mountain lions and stuff. And I'm a little bit scared of that.
Yes, yes.
So because there are no big mammals in the Alps, I feel really safe just kind of wandering around.
The best of both worlds, right?
And plus, I mean, the huts at the top of the mountain that you can get the food and the drinks, like, that's a really nice little respite. So
totally.
Yeah. So awesome. Spend a lot of time there.
Well, I can't wait for your trip. This one's amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah. And how about a favorite memory?
Well, I have, I mean, I have quite a few. I was 36 years old, but one of my, I always think the favorite memories are the ones that are also kind of like, they're not always the happiest ones,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
But this one was both.
Yeah.
It was when Ben and I, my husband, got engaged. We were in, spending some time in Edinburgh, and this was.
I love Edinburgh.
Yeah, it was so beautiful. Before a tour started, and before a Death Cab tour. And it was Halloween, and we had woken up, it was like day two of the trip, so it's like the day you're the most jet lagged.
Yes.
I was being a real piece of work that morning.
Yeah.
And I was just like feeling, I was just feeling feral. And we like bickered a little in the morning, and then we were like going to go for this run up to the top of Arthur's Seat, which is that, you know, famous mountain hill, really, the mountain in Edinburgh. And I had finished a 50K probably a month before that.
Yeah.
And I hadn't run since then. So we're like going on this like steep run. I was tired, I was cranky, and we're like running. He kept running ahead of me. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, dude, wait for me. Right. And I was just getting more angry and more angry.
Yeah.
And we get to the top of the mountain, and it was like super windy. And I was like, let's go over there, because that's where there are no people over there.
Yeah, yeah,
so mad. And then we went over there, and he turned around and pulled out a ring, and he proposed.
I love that.
And I was like sweaty and bloated. And cranky.
And not feeling your best, right?
Yeah. Definitely not my best self.
Yeah. But that's what's so beautiful. And what a way to, I don't know, I couldn't think of anything more perfect.
It was perfect. You know? I mean, it was really like, we immediately started crying, of course, because we talked about it, but I didn't know if that was going to happen.
Yeah,
And what was so beautiful about the following couple of days is that we didn't tell anybody.
Aww. It was just like yours.
It's our secret.
I just got like goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's so sweet.
You know, we live so much of our life in public, and when things like that happen, people want to know right away. And we just kept kind of to ourselves. We told my best friend from college lives in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
So we told him because we saw him later that day. But it just felt like this thing I wanted to just keep for us for a couple of days.
That.
And we
I
did. And then we told the band a couple days later, and then it was out. But
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that you told the band next. That was like your next, you know?
I think we
told a couple other people. Yeah, yeah.
I can't remember the exact order, but the fact that like we had at least 2 days where we didn't tell anybody was really...
That's awesome.
I loved that.
Oh, that sounds that's so great. And it's something that's just something that's just yours and sacred for a little bit, right?
Exactly.
That's beautiful. Oh, what a good one. I love that memory.
Thanks.
How could I forget to ask you, what about your favorite album or song?
Album or song? It's no surprise to anybody who knows me that my favorite... Well, I have like a top five favorite bands, but my favorite band, the one that I have tattooed on my arm, is Depeche Mode. And so Violator is definitely probably one of the most important records in my entire life. And it came out, and my uncle, who's only 10 years older than me, introduced me to it. And the first time I saw Anton Corbijn's video for Enjoy the Silence, I was just absolutely floored at the age of eight or nine when I saw it. And it just opened up a whole, I don't know, just this profound love of music. And I don't know why it impacted me. And I don't know why I can still listen to that record and like feel the same thing I did when I was a kid.
Yeah, that's a transformative thing.
It was the timing. It was the fact that I still think that record's fantastic.
Yeah.
And I don't think anybody who's a Depeche Mode fan would argue with that.
Totally.
But I guess if I had to pick one, it's that one.
Because it has such a meaning to you.
Such a meaning. Yeah. And the fact that I can still listen to it and still not like still hear new things in it.
Yeah.
You know, like still marvel at, you know, the songwriting and the harmonies and the fact that they were doing all of that analog, you know, like with tape loops and stuff,
Live
was just, it was just a really, And most people hear that music and they think it's like weird sex dungeon music, and that's totally fine.
Right. But it can mean something different for everybody. And, yeah. You know, it's funny. It's like you say that because I think about how, like, for me, the album that has just carried me through so much is Joni Mitchell's Blue. And I think about how those songs have meant different things to me at different points in my life. And I love that you mentioned that because it's not just like, oh, yeah, this is what the song is and this is what it means and that's the end. It's like, it actually can be kind of like a friend and how it can change,
absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. For a short time, I was writing a music column for a friend's online publication, and my very first article was about exploring music like a relationship, returning to something that you know that's well-worn. I think there's a lot of pressure to always listen to new things. And a lot of people my age especially are like, am I old and jaded if I don't want to listen to new music? And I'm like, I don't think so.
Same, yeah.
I really feel like, you know, there are certain holes in your musical knowledge that need filling, and you find the band that fills that, and can always go back and listen to that. And I think it's important to hear new things. But I don't think that just because it's new, it's worth the same amount of attention.
Totally.
And I love returning to records that I know inside and out and finding new things in there. Yeah. It's like excavation.
Yeah.
You know?
Totally.
It's like mushroom hunting or something. Totally. Just like you're like looking for it and then you find it and it feels so good. And
books can be that way too, right?
Absolutely.
You can reread a book and it can be so different for you for this time in your life.
Absolutely. And that's why I love The Count of Monte Cristo. It's so dense.
Exactly.
Read it again.
So, okay. So I really am dying to ask you one more question. And I could ask you like 1,000 more.
That's okay.
Maybe not 1,000, but you know, a lot more. There's a lot of questions for one day. But I want to make sure you have time to go to the gallery. So let's just get to this one last question. So you are such a creative person in your own right, and you're surrounded by creative people. And so can you tell me maybe one or two people whose creativity really moves you in any art form?
Any art form. Okay, so one in particular, just because she's fresh in my mind because we had lunch yesterday, is my friend Melissa Messer. She is a graphic designer by training, but she just went through a 4-year program at Gage Academy as a fine art painter and like in a classic style. And she has become somebody that really inspires me when we talk about creativity and in our process. And I love it because, you know, we have a lot of thoughts about photography and its importance and also how, if everybody does anyone care about it? And it's kind of the same with fine art painting, like in a very classic style, like people aren't really doing that anymore, you know? And so we get to kind of talk about how our art forms like kind of coexist together and how they, you know, compare and contrast. And she's got a lot of really beautiful insight. She sort of feels like a sibling, a long lost sibling as well.
That's so great.
Yeah, so she's wonderful. And her Instagram handle is like Melissa Messer Art.
Awesome.
If you want to see what she's doing.
I will definitely check that out.
Yeah, she's great.
And I think just before we end, I want to say it's a very important thing you bring up about, you mentioned the photography, how it's like, you know, a space where a lot of people are there. But I think we all need to remember that doesn't mean you shouldn't be there, even if everyone else is.
Absolutely.
And I think, I don't know, I had to remind myself of that a lot.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to shout that out. It's something that I think people need to remember. If like it means something to you, and if you feel like putting something out, you should definitely go do it.
Absolutely.
You know?
Like, we need to make stuff.
Yes.
And the fact is that like when I'm out in the world and I'm looking around and I'm always thinking about it through a photographic lens.
Yes,
like, I think about photography every day.
Ugh, and that tells you it's like you need to be doing it. It's in you, you know? And
it's just what I want
and
to
that's
do.
Exactly.
Even if like no one ever knows my name. Like
100%.
I don't need anyone to, like, I did it before I had an audience, and I'll continue to do it even if I don't have one.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Wonderful. That's a good way to end. Thank you so much. I love this conversation.
I love it too. Thank you so much for having me.
Yay. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Musings with Monse, Artists and Their Honest Stories, is audio produced by the amazing Erin Mooring, and the beautiful theme music you hear is by Heather Maloney.